This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address, and we are slated to hear from two seasoned politicos discussing the world at large, and today we are exactly 42 days away from the election. 6 weeks from today, America will decide whether Donald John Trump receives a second term or if Joseph Robinette Biden becomes the 45th American president. 877-217-5757 is your number. And on the right today, we have Rob Manus, the colonel, who, of course, ran for the U.S. Senate in 2014 when Bill Cassidy and Mary Landrieu were on the ballot. And he got 15% of the votes, and he is a ranking Republican. Last year, he broke ranks with his party and actually was not supporting Eddie Rasponi, who lost a narrow race, as we know, to John Bel Edwards. But as we look at 2020 and the presidential election, my guess, Colonel Manus, is that you are supporting Donald John Trump. Am I right or wrong?
Yes, you're correct, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Why are you supporting him?
Primarily due to his policy efforts across the spectrum. We've looked at all of his actions over the last 4 years and are overall pleased with his foreign policy, very pleased with the success with the Middle East peace processes that we've seen come to fruition lately. We're very pleased with his picks for Supreme Court nominees, and I know that's a hot button issue right now. We like his deregulation. It's helped the economy. We think he's done as well as anybody could with the COVID-19 response, and better than Mr. Biden would have, considering Mr. Biden's vehement opposition to things like stopping travel from China in January of this year. And we just think that's the best for the American people, and so we're going to be supporting it.
877-217-5757 is your number, and Rob Manus is on the right, and hopefully we will try to get Lamar White. We are trying, and I think we're about to get him, but for whatever reason, we're having some difficulty getting through to him right now. But Lamar, as we know, is the publisher of the Bayou Brief, and he is a person who I'm sure has a difference of opinion than Rob Manus on this Supreme Court issue, and also on the election that is 6 weeks away. As far as the Supreme Court, do you think the Republicans should move forward?
Well, just like President Obama did in 2016 in his last year, I supported him nominating a candidate for the Supreme Court and the Senate doing its job of advising consent. I know there's a lot of hullabaloo about hypocrisy and those kind of things with what's happening with the Senate today. Indications are that they're going to give hearings and a vote to this president's nominee. So that maybe seemed different than what happened in 2016, but we all have to remember that we had opposing parties in the presidency and the Senate in 2016, and now we have the same party. So it's meeting my expectations that you would see a different outcome, and I don't think we should leave the seat empty. I think folks that are talking about the prospect of going into this very contentious election without a full Supreme Court is not really a good idea.
Lamar White, when Merrick Garland was nominated 4 years ago, 10 months before the election, he didn't even get an interview. Now it appears that there will be a rush, and the Republicans have the votes unless four GOP senators buck the president and buck Mitch McConnell. So what do you think about, first of all, the prospect of stopping this, and secondly, should it be done?
I think absolutely it should be done. People are already voting right now. The election is not about to be underway.
When you say it should be done, you think the nomination should go forward?
No, the nomination should not go forward. Democrats should find a way to cobble together a coalition to block this nomination. It probably will be that woman from Metairie. But yeah, it reeks of hypocrisy, and you know, it's two very different situations. I would also point out that we still have a divided government. The House is run by Democrats, and you know, the president is a Republican. So I understand that it's you know, this is not the excuse Mitch McConnell made at the time, but now suddenly it is.
Yeah, well, Mitch McConnell is backtracking on what he said 4 years ago, as are many other Republicans. Ted Cruz, another one, but. Today in the New York Times, front page, top of the fold, when Senator Lindsey Graham joined a Republican blockade of President Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee in 2016, he went out of his way to frame his position that a confirmation to the court should never be allowed in an election year. Is principled, apolitical, and utterly permanent. I want you to use my words against me, Mr. Graham said then, swearing that he would hold the same stance, even if it meant denying a future Republican president the chance to confirm his chosen nominee. But less than 24 hours after the hypothetical became a reality with the death of Justice Ginsburg on Friday, Graham, now the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, made a complete and brazen reversal. He promised he would push forward immediately to confirm President Trump's pick, seemingly unbothered by the obvious conflict between his position 4 years ago and his stance now. 877-217-5757 is your number. And let's start with Aaron in Prairieville. Aaron, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Lamar White and Rob Maness. Hi, Aaron.
Yes, sir. What is your opinion, though, of the Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Schumer, and even Ruth Ginsbader, Darth Vader, whatever her name is, opinion last time in 2016 that it should go forward?
All right. That was 10 months. This is 42 days, but does Aaron have a point, Lamar?
No, it's a completely different set of circumstances. 10 months is quite a long time. Like I said, we're literally voting right now. There are states in which voting is underway right as we speak. So it's comparing apples to oranges. And also, I mean, I just emphasize that this was a rule that the Republicans put in place.
All right. Well, Rob Maness, do these people take the risk of looking like hypocrites in the American electorate reacting negatively in 6 weeks? What do you think about the political ramifications of this?
Well, I think the call about hypocrites rings hollow with most of the American people. You know, if you go back and look at folks like including Mr. Biden, President Trump's opponent, they're all over the map on both sides on this. So I think politically, the president really has to go forward with his nomination, and I don't think anybody is surprised or even opposing that in realistic terms. The question is the Senate, as Lamar brought up, and I brought up, you know, and there, it looks like they're considering going forward, and I think they should from a political perspective. Their voters on the Republican side that voted for this president in 2016, large parts of those voters voted for him because of his willingness to put a list of Supreme Court nominees out.
All right. Patrick in Ennisuwalda State. Patrick, you're on with Lamar and Colonel Maness. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. All that really matters is that, you know, when Obama was president, the Republicans controlled the Senate, and Republicans control the Senate now, and it doesn't really matter. The voters have voted. We want a Republican Senate to make sure that a conservative Supreme Court justice is appointed, and we want to make sure that the Constitution is conserved, that our rights are conserved. Obama was a communist. That's why we blocked him.
All right. Obama was a communist. That's why he was blocked, according to Patrick in Ennisuwalda States. Now, Lamar, I don't think many people in American life, even Obama's detractors, think he was a communist. But the Republicans did have the votes then. They have the votes now. And it all comes down to politics generally. And Lindsey Graham says, look, they would be doing the same thing. Is he right, or is he trying to rationalize this in some way?
I don't know. Democrats have a tendency to, you know, play by the rules and to the point where it hurts them. So, yeah, I think that probably if the shoe was on the other foot, we probably would be doing the same thing. Our position would be consistent. I mean, it would be don't put forward a nominee while the election is underway.
Well, it is hardball politics, and some would say, Colonel Maness, that the best bet for the Republicans as far as looking at it from an electoral standpoint would be basically putting this on the ballot, saying, look, if you reelect President Trump, you're going to get a conservative justice. If you elect Joe Biden, you're going to get a liberal justice. So why not do it that way? Wouldn't that be palatable and perhaps get some votes for the president that he might not otherwise receive?
Oh, I definitely think that politically, from an electoral perspective, the president putting the nomination forward and asking for a quick vote to get this done beforehand is going to ensure that he gets those votes that might have been on the fence for him due to Mr. Biden's desire to appear moderate.
All right. You're saying it's actually going to help the president. We'll talk about it some more with Colonel Rob Maness and Lamar White, publisher of the Bayou Brief. We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and some more time with Colonel Rob Maness on the right, Lamar White of the Bayou Brief on the left. We're talking about the Supreme Court nomination that President Trump says he will deliver to the American people on Saturday. A vote could come as early as next week. President Trump appeared to secure enough support, this from the New York Times and its other front page story about this today, enough support on Monday to fill the seat left open by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, although Senate Republicans remain publicly undecided if they would try to force through his nominee before the election or wait until after voters have decided whether to grant him a second term. Really, there are just a few senators that Democrats can hope will join Murkowski and Collins. They need two more. It's 50-50, which it would be with a third vote. If they got Mitt Romney, then certainly Mike Pence would cast the deciding vote in favor of the nominee. 877-217-5757. And the New York Times reports that, is it Mitt Romney is backing the he's backing the move by the president. So here's a man who called for the voted for the impeachment of the president, to convict him on articles of impeachment, and now he is, being the conservative that he is, he and a senator from Utah, he's calling for the move to go forward. So that seems to be a slam dunk that this is going to happen, barring something really unusual. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Lamar and with Colonel Maness. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yeah, Colonel Maness, as a retired military man, is your support for Trump in any way tempered by his dissing McCain, Maness, McAllister, Kelly, Powell, etc.?
Yeah, how has Trump treated his generals? He was bragging about them when he had them in the early years, and now most, if not all of them, have gone. What do you think?
Well, as far as the McCain issue, I called President Trump out, then candidate Trump out, when he made the comments about POWs that really was out of line. And he shouldn't, but he's now the commander in chief, and I'm actually pleased that he's called out some of these generals and admirals that have not been doing their job, and made compliments about the ones that have done their job. You know, one of the best decisions this president made at the beginning of his term was to give the generals and admirals on the battlefield the amount of rain they needed in order to go ahead and defeat the geographic caliphate issue that was then occurring and really out of control. And
all right, 877-217-5757. We got a lot of folks talking. That's why you need to be brief when you chime in, but we're glad you're calling. And let's go to Rose in Mid-City. Rose, you're on with the Colonel and with Lamar White. Hi, Rose.
I think you're right that you should let the people decide. It is of the people and for the people. So let them decide. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Rose. Appreciate your comments. Let's try Leonard on airline. Leonard, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah. Do you think Donald Trump is desperate? That's why he's trying to hurry up and rush to replace, the judge, because if he doesn't, that he might be facing the slew of charges when he loses.
All right. Well, some of these matters, like a contested election, could come before a Supreme Court with a 6-3 Republican majority. We know what happened in 2000 with a 7-2 Republican majority. By the way, there were seven Republican appointees on that court that voted 5-4 for the vote recount in Florida to stop, which would have made Albert Gore the president. And Al Gore actually got two of the Republicans to go with him, and Stevens and Souter. But Lamar White, is this a concession by the Republicans that Trump's in deep trouble? Otherwise, it would seem that they would just say, look, let's be fair, let's get it go forward. Or is this considered perhaps the only chance the Republicans will have to get that sixth justice? What do you think?
I think you're 1,000% right that this is just the only play that they have, because they look at the polling and it suggests that Donald Trump is behind, and you pay basically everywhere that he won 4 years ago, and that he's losing the national polls by substantially more than he was down to Hillary Clinton by. So, you know, the seat would be empty regardless, and if he really believed he was confident in his reelection, then we probably would not be having this discussion right now.
And, of course, the Senate is up for grabs, too, and that's considered by some to be leaning blue as well. James in Metairie, you're on with Colonel Maness and Lamar White. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Thank you, and good morning. Lamar White, your reaction, please, to the demagoguery of this president. Over the weekend, I'm quoting the president. He said about Biden, if you vote for Biden, quote, there will be no oil. That's a lie. There will be no God. That's another lie. And there will be no guns. Another lie. Your reaction, please.
All right. Is this just politics, or is Trump taking it to a new level, Lamar?
He's been taking it to a new level for, what, 5 years now? It progressively gets worse. Yeah, that's absurd. And I guess this is just a way to rile up his very fringe base.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm reading several stories on Romney, and it does appear that he is joining forces with the president. But all it says, apparently all he said, is that he's in favor of holding a vote. He doesn't necessarily say who he's voting for or voting against. So you would think if it's a conservative justice, though, that Mitt Romney would vote for the justice despite his stated intention and a vote to back it up that he wanted Trump out of office. Rob Maness, I'm sure you're pleased that Mitt Romney is in the GOP camp. What do you think?
Well, that's good news from the conservative perspective. He does represent a state that is very pro-life, and this is an opportunity from the social conservatives' perspective to get a pro-life justice nominated to the court and get one in, whether the president wins the national election or not.
All right. Actually, before we go back to Lamar, Lauren in Mid-City. Lauren, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, good morning. I'd just like for you to comment on why both sides can't just see this as an opportunity to win, even if they don't win in November, to elect someone moderate and reasonable. Maybe it would be the best thing for the American people.
So what is your take on whether it should go forward, Lauren?
I think that it should go forward because then maybe both sides could win. Maybe there would actually be discussion and consideration of qualifications aside from politics.
All right. Lamar, what if Trump, if he really wanted to get some votes out of this, what if he went against the grain and nominated a conservative Democrat, for example, a John Bel Edwards type.
Merrick Garland.
Or a Merrick Garland. That would probably gain him more points than anything right. else, but putting another hardcore conservative on is just going to solidify his base and irritate all the people who hate him. So does this really move the needle at all one way or the other?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
It may motivate Democrats to go out. I mean, that it will galvanize Democrats to go out and vote. But
and it can do the same for his base, because you can bet it's going to be messy. And
yeah.
Tomorrow we'll be talking with Stephanie Grace about how Kennedy and Cassidy will square in on this. Well, Lamar, I think we know, don't we?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
All right. William in Opelousas. William, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Lamar White and Colonel Maness. Hi, William.
Hey, how you doing, Jim? And thank you for taking the call. Jim, I'm almost 70 years old, and I've lived the time where we had different laws for black and white, and now we having a different law, and these people keep hollering about the Constitution. They threw the Constitution out the door a long time ago to support Donald Trump. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thank you, William. Appreciate your patriotism. Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy.
I just want to make a comment. I can remember shortly how messy and vicious it was with the Kavanaugh hearing, and I hope that doesn't happen again. Thanks.
All right. Well, it's probably going to be a quick hearing, and they're really Mitch McConnell, he said he could do this in 30 seconds. There may not even be a hearing. But I suspect there will, and I suspect it will be quick, and I also doubt that there will be the same kind of explosive revelations about the nominee that we saw with Brett Kavanaugh, but we never know. We'll talk a bit more with Lamar White and Rob Manus. 877-217-5757, your number. Now this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Just a few more minutes with Colonel Rob Manus on the right, Lamar White on the left. Lamar is publisher of Bayou Brief, and Rob has become a major player in Republican politics. He's run for office a few times, as we know, but he has Gator Pack, and Rob is backing President of the United States, who once chided him for being in the same race with Bill Cassidy, but they've obviously patched things up. And the president will go before the American people on Saturday to announce his choice to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And based on the decision today from Willard Mitt Romney, senator from Utah, that he thinks the process should go forward, it appears the Republicans have the votes to get a sixth justice. Ruth Bader Ginsburg died 46 days before the election. Ray in Prairieville. Ray, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Ray? All right. Tell Ray that he needs to turn his radio down, and we hopefully will get to him. Before we go back to Ray, obviously we're going to be talking about this tomorrow with Stephanie Grace, who will look at how Cassidy and Kennedy will chime in on this. But they've been very loyal to the president, and Rob Manus, it would seem to be the shock of all shocks if either one of them went the other direction on this.
Yeah, I would expect that both the Louisiana senators will not have a problem and will step up to say they'll vote on the nomination, that they'll support the president's nominee, regardless of who it is. I think Judge Barrett being on the short list, and if she's nominated, there's no doubt that both those guys likely vote to confirm her. I would like to go back to your other caller. I think it was Lauren that talked about coming together and those kind of things. And just point out one of the reasons why we're here at this moment in time, and one of the reactions you're getting from a lot of folks on the ground at the grassroots is, hey, we saw the Kavanaugh hearings. No quarter is the term that I hear from folks all the time on social media, on the right, about this. And I think the Democrats are going to regret that carnival show that they put on.
All right. Well, Lamar White, it appeared that the primary witness against Brett Kavanaugh was quite compelling. In fact, at the time of the testimony, even Donald Trump said that she was. Why is there this perception now that this was a witch hunt and so unfair to Justice Kavanaugh?
I mean, because they have to justify being hypocrites. But it's as simple as that, I think.
All right. Let's go to Ray in Prairieville. We'll give him one more shot, and then we'll finish up with Lamar and Colonel Manus. Ray, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking it. Big grief. What is your speaker's viewpoint on the Democrats and the Republicans voting 100% each way on every issue these days?
All right. Lamar, what about Democrats and Republicans voting in unison? It appears that all the Democrats, for example, will vote to stop this, but at least two of the Republicans are switching over. And Romney did vote for conviction, so occasionally there is an outlier, but usually it's pretty much party line. What do you think?
I would emphasize that Mitt Romney voted to convict and remove the president from office. that would have the effect of removing him from office. So it seems a little weird that he's in support of this if he thinks Trump is an illegitimate president.
It does seem interesting, but Mitt Romney is a political animal, and he probably got lots of grief for what he did in the great state of Utah, which you can bet President Trump will carry in 6 weeks. Rob Maness, what about the party line votes that almost always happen on these sensitive issues? What do you think?
Well, I think it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. It's where we're at today. Although I think there may be a couple of folks that are on the Democrat side that could possibly go with the president's nominee and vote for them. You know, Doug Jones over in Alabama is in a very tight race, so we'll see what happens. But there's always that possibility too.
Well, there's Joe Manchin in West Virginia. It's possible, but 6 weeks out, who wins, Rob Maness?
I think President Trump's going to win. The swing states have always been tight. He won in a very tight race the last time, but I think he's going to win with even more of an advantage this time.
All right. Even more of an advantage. Lamar White is the colonel off base. So.
I mean, I've learned not to make predictions, you know, too boldly after 2016, but as of right now, it's Joe Biden in a landslide.
When you say a landslide, what does that mean?
Talking more than 350 electoral college votes.
More than 350?
Yeah.
350.
Yeah. I think Texas is in play. There was a poll that came out yesterday of Texas that has Joe Biden up by four.
Well, Texas was decided by nine. I think it was 9 points last time, which was kind of a victory for Hillary Clinton. But when you get down to it, it all comes down to who wins the state. It would be very surprising if Texas went to Biden, and if it did, then you're right. Then that means a landslide. But he's got to go with Florida, and Trump's quite possibly going to appoint a nominee, or he's going to nominate a justice from the great state of Florida. Is Florida a done deal for Joe Biden?
Oh no, not by any means. I don't think Florida's not a done deal. No, it's particularly because, you know, they've purged a lot of voters from the file. I mean, who knows? It's going to be very close.
But 350 overall.
That's what I'm saying right now, though. So don't hold me to that on Election Day.
And, of course, Colonel Maness is predicting the president will do even better than he did in 2016. And we know he lost the overall vote by almost 3 million votes. But he did... win in the Electoral College, and last time around, the President of the United States received 304 electoral votes. Thanks to both of you gentlemen. It is always a pleasure. Lamar White, Colonel Rob Maness, let's do it again soon. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Take care. We're joined now in studio by two people intricately involved in a conference today. It'll be a virtual conference, but still, it's a partnership with Southern University, the Louisiana Budget Project, the NAACP Louisiana State Conference, and the LSU Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And with us are Janae Slocum, who is the Riley Center Director and the Director of Public Affairs and Outreach at the Louisiana Budget Project, Devontae Lewis. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And let's begin with you, Janae. What's exactly going to happen this afternoon for people who wish to participate in this conference, which is the title, Racism Dismantling the System. What do you have in mind today?
Well, actually, this is the first of at least year-long series with these partners. And this first one is really looking at kind of the basic concepts of what is race and, you know, when people talk about structural or institutional racism, what does that mean and how has that been built into our systems?
Well, the goal of the series, as stated, is to amplify voices of advocates, academics, journalists, and more working for racial justice in the nation and beyond. And Devontae Lewis, you work with our friend Jan Moeller at the Budget Project. How big of an issue is race in the state of Louisiana right now?
I would say race is extremely important. I think when we talk about policy, we have to start from the premise that no policy is race neutral, which means policy will affect different races very differently based off of the system that we have built in. And so when we are talking about income inequality, health care, access to COVID, we have to look at race because we know the only way we can solve all of our inequalities and give everyone a fighting chance to prosper is having direct targeted policy. So I think it's extremely important in this state.
All right, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And we have Davante Lewis, who is Director of Public Affairs and Outreach at the Louisiana Budget Project, and Janae Slocum, who is the Riley Center Director. And we're talking about race at LSU, and we'll give you the way you can join this meeting this afternoon remotely if you so choose. But it is Bill in North Baton Rouge who says, is there a disconnect at LSU right now with the stadium only being 25% filled, and yet players are on the field pushing around each other and all over each other? It is football, by the way, and 85% of the team is African-American. What about that? Is this an affront to the young black athletes who are playing football at LSU? Davante, what do you think?
I mean, I think race and sports has been a conversation that has been ongoing for years that is coming to a head. When we talk about COVID, we know it disproportionately affected black and brown people in this state. And we know, as you mentioned, football teams are naturally black in this state. So I think it is a conversation that we have to talk about the safety and the security of not just players, but also in how race plays into policy and decision making.
Well, I go to the games and the fan base is at least 95% white. And here we have protections for the white fans, and yet we have no protections for the black players.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I think that is part of the conversation about when we talk about structural racism and how sometimes the institution is favoring whiteness. And so when you talk about white privilege, oftentimes people think it means white people have an advantage. But it just means that the de facto policy decision favors whiteness over black and brown. And so I think that's why we're having this conversation, to talk about how structures have set up whiteness as the default answer rather than looking at the multicolor, multiracial population and how policies mm-hmm. and procedures affect them.
And, of course, we have many more issues other than football. And Janae, when we look at our city, we've talked about it many times, there is a disconnect between North Baton Rouge and South Baton Rouge. Is that the kind of thing that will be discussed in this series?
Yes. We'll be talking about those kinds of issues across our state as well as our nation. One of the reasons that we've brought together these partners is to have a broader conversation about what's happening in our city as well as other communities in Louisiana. Southern University's Nelson Mandela College is part of the partnership, as well as the Louisiana State Conference of the NAACP.
So a lot of prominent people. And it'll start today, and we'll get more information about this conference, Racism Dismantling the System. Janae Slocum and Davante Lewis will return for a few more minutes. Your number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. In just a moment, we're going to hear from the intrepid investigative reporter Stephen Dudley. He's got quite a book, MS-13, The Making of America's Most Notorious Gang. But we're finishing up with two people involved intricately in a year-long series that starts today at LSU, Racism Dismantling the System. And with us are Janae Slocum, who is director of the Riley Center, and Davante Lewis, director of public affairs at the Louisiana Budget Project. And this is likely to be a 10-part series today. The focus primarily will be on
what is race and looking at kind of what does structural and institutional racism really mean.
And for those who would like to participate remotely, how's the process go? What do they have to do?
Well, it's entirely remote, and you need to register on Eventbrite. You can go to lsuRileyCenter.com and find that link. And to watch it live, you can also go to the Facebook Live Louisiana Budget Project site.
Davante, another listener, this is Hal in Monroe, is listening online, says, you know, we talk a lot about race and issues, but when it comes down to it, every year we seem to have the same problems that are intensified. If anything else, they get worse rather than better. What are we doing wrong?
Well, I think we're starting from the wrong premise. I think one of the things that we're probably going to talk about today is that we often forget that race is a social construct, that it's we created it. So it's going to take us all to dismantle kind of the racial inequities and racial inequalities because it was man-made. And so that's kind of what we're talking about. What does structural racism look like, and how do we start the process of undoing 400-plus years that built a system off of segregation and intolerance on race?
All right. And Tom on Bluebonnet wants to know, do you have any listed speakers today? In line today?
Our moderator is Dr. Michael McClanahan, who is the president of the Louisiana State Conference for the NAACP. We also have Dr. Laura Adderley from Tulane, Cassandra Cheney from LSU, Andrew Jolivet, who's actually at UC San Diego, and Albert Samuels, who's part of the organizing group from Southern University.
Yeah, a few of those have been on our show. Albert Samuels, of course, many, many times. Guy who knows his stuff.
And he sure does.
Let's look forward to a good series, and let's keep in touch, and good luck today and beyond. Devante.
I like the new name.
Well, anyway, it's a nice name, but your name is Devante with a D, and Janae's is Janae with a J, Slocum. But thank you for your good work, and let's keep going. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Stephen Dudley is with us, and his book is MS-13, The Making of America's Most Notorious Gang. Stephen is the co-founder of Insight Crime. It's a think tank devoted to organized crime and corruption in the Americas. As a journalist in Latin America, he spent most of the past two decades writing for the Washington Post, NPR, the BBC, and the Miami Herald. And good morning to you, Stephen Dudley.
Morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well, and congratulations on your work. And, of course, this is a thing that many Americans who even follow the news closely may not be fully aware of, but it goes back to the 1980s when El Salvador was engulfed in a bloody fight for control of the government. Many fled to the U.S. to escape guerrilla assaults and death squads, settling, namely, in Los Angeles. And survival instincts kicked in. Some Salvadoran immigrants formed a social network bound by rock and roll called the Mara Stoners. You probably have the correct name, but I think that's the abbreviated name. And later, as they interacted and established local gangs, the group took on a harder edge, and it became MS-13. And this is your story, The Making of America's Most Notorious Gang. How notorious, how dangerous is MS-13, Stephen Dudley?
The sort of million-dollar question there, and certainly a politically charged question, they are dangerous. They do operate in half a dozen nations in this hemisphere alone. They are a criminal gang, to be sure. They are involved in things such as extortion, drug peddling, prostitution, maybe some measure of human trafficking on a very low scale. So there's that. But there's the other part, which is they have become a political football, and they are, a large gang, certainly by any measure, anywhere of 8,000 to 10,000 members, but their main rival, the 18th Street, which was also born on the streets of Los Angeles, another Latino gang like them, is about five times bigger, but you don't hear about the 18th Street at all. The MS-13 is just kind of an easier monster to depict, I guess, on a political side. So they're very dangerous, to be sure. They're a criminal gang, to be sure. But there are others that are bigger than they are, henceforth the most notorious gang, rather than titling the book The Most Dangerous Gang.
So there are others that are similar. Did MS-13, was it a model for others to crop up?
More like the MS-13 picked up models that already existed. There is a sort of Latino or Mexican-American model that they picked up from in L.A. There is a long tradition of Latino gangs in L.A. L.A. is really kind of the epicenter of gang activity in the United States for a lot of reasons, but part of it has to do with this constant influx of immigrants and the competition amongst them for scant resources in very densely populated places, in places like Los Angeles. So that's kind of your formula for gangs in general. But certainly, you know, worked to the nth degree in Los Angeles. And they sort of picked up the model from that, you know, so a lot of the same rituals, initiation rituals, the same sorts of rules, and they also evolve in very similar ways. One of the most formidable Mexican-American gangs is the Mexican Mafia, which is based out of the mostly out of the California state prison system. And the MS-13 falls under the umbrella group that the Mexican Mafia created from its prison cells called the Sureños, so the Southerners. And they're one of about 50 gangs that falls under that larger umbrella. So they sort of pick up from those traditions.
The book is MS-13, The Making of America's Most Notorious Gang, from Stephen Dudley. Now, MS-13, these people who are members, they sell drugs, they steal cars, but they also kill a lot of people, don't they?
They do kill people. They are very violent. Their violence is really kind of a core essence of what they are about, unfortunately. You know, there's a bit of violence to secure entry. There is a violent ritual to actually enter, you know, become a formal member of the group. You commit violent acts against others to show how committed you are to the group. And, you know, at the end of the day, violence really helps them coalesce. It's sort of this collective spirit of violence that really congeals the organization in a lot of ways. To the point where they commit violent acts very often in collectives. They will literally pass around weapons to make sure everybody participates. And then once you're in, well, then you're in, you know, all the way. There isn't sort of a halfway into this particular group, which also makes it then very difficult to extricate yourself from the organization over time. So This is one of the hallmarks of the organization.
MS-13, The Making of America's Most Notorious Gang, from Stephen Dudley. You report that it has 10,000 members operating in perhaps as many as a dozen states. How widespread is MS-13 in this country of ours?
You know, those are estimates that we get from the FBI, which talks to local police forces, which will give you, you know, I guess, I don't know, decent estimates, I guess. But just be clear that those are estimates that are just that, they're estimates. Most of the MS-13 operates out of very big cities, the cities that were, you know, large Salvadoran, Guatemalan, and Honduran populations live. So we're talking about Los Angeles, mm-hmm. Houston, New York, Washington, D.C. area, you know, to a certain extent, Boston area. So these are the spaces in which they operate. They are, you know, I guess in some respects widespread, but most of their members are concentrated in these spaces, and they operate in small cells. So in the United States, you get the cells that are about 10 to 15 guys. And, you know, so they're not occupying towns as has been described, or, you know, sort of overrunning police stations or anything like that. And they're really, you know, victimizing the people who live around them.
All right,
you know,
we're short on time, sure. Stephen, but what could be done that's not being done, if anything, to stop this?
I mean, there's a couple of things I would say. The first thing is the shift of resources. We need to pay more attention to integrating these immigrant communities into the school system and better social services and things of that sort. And then the other thing is the creation of alternative communities where these kids, you know, can have a really active and, you know, a very vibrant young life, you know. So that's certainly the two spaces we can look to improve on.
The book is MS-13, The Making of America's Most Notorious Gang, from Stephen Dudley. Thank you, Stephen. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan. Stay safe and stay tuned.